every now and again, I feel as though I deserve a treat. A little reward. Life is all about hard work, and God knows I've worked hard. But that hard work counts for nothing if you don't feel as though you can give yourself a little treat now and again. I prefer plain chocolate to milk. I feel as though they're that little bit more sophisticated. My particular favourite is the hazelnut cluster. But you know what? I'll leave that to last. That's what psychiatrists call deferred gratification. Now, my least favourite is the apricot surprise. I've never been that keen on apricots at the best of times, and quite frankly, I find the apricot surprise rather sickly. So I eat that first, get it out of the way. Then I work my way through the whole box, going from my least favourite to my next least favourite, till I'm left with the hazelnut cluster at the end. Now, other people choose to do it the other way round. They open the box and go straight for the hazelnut cluster. Everything's a disappointment after that. Till in the end, they're left with the apricot surprise in the bottom of the box and they don't know what to do with it. I've no sympathy for them. You can tell a lot about a person from the way that they eat a box of chocolates.
Prunella Scales as Christine opens a box of chocolates, a confection created by Chris Reason.
No, I'm sorry. I'm never going to take to that apricot surprise. I need something to take the taste away. I like to alternate between soft and hard. Caramel, I think. Anyway, this is the letter she sent me, for what it's worth. I won't say it made me angry. If I were to select a word, an adjective, I'd say pitying. What saddens me, you see, is the bitterness of the woman. God knows, I'm 43 years old. I've had my fair share of upsets and disappointments and tragedies. Oh, yes, that's not too strong a word. Let's face it, we all have. But we don't all go around with faces like a wet weekend, and we certainly don't write letters like this. No, I feel sorry for her. I'm not going to get angry. But it's her own fault. She carries it round with her. Bitterness. A great big dirty laundry bag full of bitterness. It's probably not fair to name names, so I won't. But let's say that the person to whom I'm referring, the person who wrote this letter, is a person who is not entirely unrelated to me. My aunt, in fact, that's my mother's sister, very bitter woman. She's eaten up with bitterness. And there's nothing you can say. In fact, after that last letter I wrote, when she didn't write straight back, I was under the impression, mistaken now, as it turns out, that a state of non-communication existed between us. I thought about phoning, but then I thought, what's the point? I'm not going to phone long distance, cheap rate or no cheap rate, just to be shouted at down the phone. Like last time, I said, I'm only trying to help. At which point, she started screaming at me. Not too strong a word. And using, it has to be said, one or two extremely vulgar colloquialisms, which, coming from the mouths of my own children, would merit a stiff box round the ears. And this from an aunt. Strawberry cup. Very nice, not bad at all. Anyway, when you've tried to help, when you've offered and it's been thrown back in your face, after a while you begin to wonder why you bothered to make all that effort in the first place. You give up, I admit, quite openly. Quite candidly, I've given up. I haven't got the time to play Good Samaritan month in, month out. She might be trying to make amends now, but it's too late. She's a silly woman. And that's all there is to her, a very silly woman. Of course, there's an element of jealousy in all this. And maybe that sounds arrogant. Why should she be jealous of me? Whoever heard of an aunt being jealous of her niece? Well, maybe she's not. I can't look inside her mind and speak for her. But you see, her own family's never done very well. The son's unemployed, simply refuses to take a job as far as I can make out. And the daughter is married to what I am told is a synthesizer player in a rock band. But I'm not going to judge, each to his own. But, of course, she looks across at her sister's family, i.e. me, and, well, maybe comparisons are odious, I don't know, but let's face it, I've done very well. We've done very well. Dave, that's my husband, he's got a very responsible job, very responsible indeed. I'll tell you what it was, but you know, Official Secrets Act.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking he must be some sort of secret agent, aren't you? Well, nothing quite so glamorous, I'm afraid. Let's just say it involves the defence of the realm and leave it at that. A very responsible job indeed. And, of course, he gets a salary commensurate with that responsibility. but not James Bond, if that's what you're thinking. I should be so lucky. Always home for his tea. 6:30 sharp. Unless he's doing overtime, of course. In which case, it can be all hours. But like he says, it's double time, and we're not talking double peanuts either. Do you like Montelimar? I do. I'm starting to get onto the good ones now. No, really, we've done very well. Beautiful house. It really is. This might sound like boasting. Well, maybe it is. But I don't believe in hiding a light under a bushel. We bought it from you when Dave got this job. That was 6 years ago now. It's one of five what are termed executive residences in a quiet little cul-de-sac called Bellevue Gardens. Four bedrooms. One with ensuite shower and wash hand basin. Bathroom, two reception, one dining, a large kitchen fitted, and a WC stroke cloakroom downstairs. And, of course, we mustn't forget a well-stocked garden with apple tree, pear tree, cherry tree, alpine rockery, not to mention the patio with built-in barbecue. Dave built that himself. Very handy. He's done so much to this house. And she resents that, too. He's saved us a fortune over the years. Did that playroom up in the attic as well, you know? Everyone who comes to this house marvels at that playroom. Added literally thousands to the value of the house. It was 25,000 when we bought it. People don't believe it when I tell them now. People next door but one from us never did find out their names. They sold theirs last week for £110,000. And they've done nothing with their attic, and they've not a barbecue patio or any other features. I mean, it makes you wonder what we'd get for ours. Think what it would be worth if we were in London. £250,000 minimum, and the rest. I chose all the decorations myself. I'm very proud of them. When Shirley, that's my aunt, oh, goodness me, I've gone and given the game away now, haven't I? I said I wouldn't name names, didn't I? Oh, well, what's done is done. Shirley, my aunt, the bitter one. When she first saw this house, after we'd had it all finished, this would have been after the playroom was built, too. She looked round. She says, "Very nice, Christine, but I'm not sure about the purple stair carpet." I mean, I could have been angry. I had a right to be angry, but I wasn't. I felt sorry for her. She's pathetic, really. You could tell. It was as plain as a nose on your face. She was jealous. She was green with jealousy. All I wanted her to do was to share in our happiness, but she wouldn't do it. She couldn't bring herself to. All right, she lives in a pokey two up, two down in Leeds or somewhere, but is that our fault? If she's pleading poverty, and to be quite frank, I'm not so sure that things are half as bad as she likes to make out. If she's pleading poverty, she ought not to be eating herself up with envy over us. She ought to be looking for the right place to pin the blame. And we all know where that is. Not that she's prepared to face up to that one. The only real disadvantage, and I don't want to appear a snob here, is living in Scotland. I like the Scots, don't get me wrong. They're not nearly as mean as they're made out to be. But, well, let's take the schools. When we came up here from Portsmouth, I was perfectly prepared to give the local schools a go. It would give Roger and Amanda, they're my children, by the way, it would give them a chance to fit into the neighbourhood and meet other local children. But I'm afraid it didn't work out. For a start, we found that we were in the same catchment area as the council estate. Well, the people who live there, I'm sorry. This is me sounding a snob again. But they've no sense of pride. I drove round it once. I had to go and pick up some jumble for the RSPCA. Well, litter, it was a disgrace. I said to Dave when I got back, if they choose to live like that, then they've no one to blame but themselves. I've no sympathy. Anyway, Amanda and Roger started at the local junior before we got wind of any of this. Well, it didn't take long to find out what was what. School didn't have any books, and those they did have were all torn and scribbled over, and there was no discipline. I believe, and I hold to this one quite firmly, that sometimes a good clip round the ear is worth 100 talking to's. But when I said that to one of the teachers up there, he got quite shirty, quite unnecessarily unpleasant, called me Neanderthal
I thought, that's rich. Me, Neanderthal, and him looking as though he'd not have a shave for 3 days. I said, no wonder half the windows are broken and they have to share one textbook between two. Well, we came away from that first parents' evening. We got into the car and Dave turns to me and says, I'm sorry, Christine, but our children are not staying at that school a day longer than is absolutely necessary. I don't care what sacrifices we have to make. Our children's education has to come first. I said, Dave, I'm with you 100%. Orange cream. Where was I? Oh, yes, school. Well, it didn't quite work out. You see, after we'd gone into all the figures, we realised we were going to have to make some compromises. You see, we were halfway through buying this little holiday home in Millport. That's on a little island in the mouth of the Clyde called Cumbrae, for those of you who don't know it. Or should I say Cumbrae, as the locals would have us pronounce it. Anyway, it was too late to think about pulling out. And anyway, we'd had a heart set on it from the moment we heard we were coming up to Scotland. So by the time we'd done our sums, we found that we could only afford to send Roger to the private school. It's unfair on Amanda, I know, but the way we look at it is this. Roger is a boy, and whether you like it or not, he's the one who's going to have to grow up and be a breadwinner one day. He needs the education. Amanda may well get a job herself one day, but in the end, she's going to want to marry, settle down, and have a family, and an expensive private education isn't going to do her much good then. So, it was Roger that went to Whitestone's while Amanda had to stay at St. Joseph's. Life is all about making hard decisions. It was a hard decision I made over Shirley, the aunt that I was telling you about. But as I said to Dave, it's no good wringing your hands and gnashing your teeth. Hard decisions have to be made. Of course, we are hoping to get Amanda into the private sector before she has to go to the comprehensive, and of course it's needing the money to pay for that that lies behind all this unpleasantness with Aunt Shirley. I tried to explain, but she wouldn't listen. She didn't want to listen. Excuse me. Diet for me tomorrow. Anyway, part of the problem is that she's very ill-educated. I started trying to explain about this loony lefty council that we've got up here. But she doesn't read the papers and she had no idea what I was talking about. Well, their latest bright idea for the local schools around here is peace studies. She never heard of that either. Now, I tell you, Dave, my husband, is the kindest and most gentle chap you could ever hope to meet. But when he got wind of this one, he went apoplectic. He says, peace studies. I'll give them peace studies. Pack the lot of them off to Moscow where they belong. And he's right, because it's these same people who moan on about unemployment. It never occurs to them that half the people around here would be out of a job tomorrow if we were to do what they want to teach our kids in peace studies. Dave said he was going to write a letter to the Prime Minister, but he never did. All the people Dave works with down at the yards, doing the same as us, voting with their children's feet. Nearly everyone who works down there in the senior grades has their kids in the private sector these days. It's sad because I can remember a time when the schools in this country were something to be proud of. Coffee cream. I made all these points to her in the letter I wrote. But it must have gone straight over her head because in this letter that I've got here, she doesn't refer to them once. Listen to this. Dear Christine, thank you for your last letter. I'm sorry that I haven't written before, but just recently I've been experiencing a good deal of trouble with my nerves. Well, that's a joke for a start. Ever since I can remember, we've all of us always had to tiptoe around Aunt Shirley because she has trouble with her nerves. Well, that excuse is beginning to wear a bit thin now, I can tell you. It was always a pretense, and now that Mother's passed away, I, for one, don't feel the need to pretend any more. You see, the problem with people like Aunt Shirley and her husband when he was alive is that they think the world owes them a living. They think that life is one long free lunch. I said to her, I said, Auntie Shirley, in this world, you make your own luck. And if people have let you down, as you say they have, you have to ask yourself why. Well, she didn't like that. And I must say, I did feel a bit bad saying it.
But goodness me, she needs to be told. That's always been her problem, you see. No one's ever had the guts to tell her. Certainly not Mother while she was alive. You see, my mother was a remarkable woman and I miss her deeply. But if she had a fault, and Lord knows if you're going to have a fault, this is the one to have. She was simply too nice, too generous. And, of course, finally, she ends up being taken advantage of by her own sister, the aforementioned Auntie Shirley. In fact, Dave and I have discussed this. It's not stretching credibility very far to say that if it wasn't for all the worry and stress that Auntie Shirley caused her over the years, my mother might still be alive today, and my kids would still have a grandma. Of course, I'm not calling Auntie Shirley a murderess, but I don't think I'd be prosecuted for slander if I were to describe her as an accessory before the fact. Truffle and nougat. I love nougat. Mm. Now, I'm not one who likes to rake over old coals. In my book, the motto is forgive and forget. That's what the good book says, and who am I to quarrel with that? But sometimes you have to let the past inform your view of the present. I mean, you'd never know how to operate if you didn't. So what I'm going to say now is not said out of any sense of bitterness or resentment. I'm just going to tell you the facts and let you make up your own mind. It all comes down to money, doesn't it always? Well, maybe in an ideal world it wouldn't matter, but this isn't an ideal world and we just have to make the best of it. I'd better sketch you in the background. You see, my father, and this comes as a surprise to a lot of people, was a trades union organiser. This is by the by, but I must tell you. Once, when we were still living down at Portsmouth, I was attending a meeting. I had time for that sort of thing in those days. This was before the children, you understand. And I was standing up and making a point. I was saying that it had nothing to do with colour. A person can be sky blue pink for all I care. It doesn't worry me. But I was saying it was a question of culture. Do we really want our children coming home from school complaining because the only thing that was on offer for school dinners that day was curry? Anyway, this young chap stands up. He had a beard, all angry, huffing and puffing and accusing me of being, what was it now? A racist and a fascist. I said, me, fascist? I'll have you know that my father was paid union official for the T&G on Hull Docks for 12 years from 1947 to 1959. Well, that soon shut him up, I can tell you. Anyway, that's all by the by. The point was that my father worked damned hard all his life till the day he died. In fact, it was the pressure of work that killed him. That along with other matters. The doctors tried to palm us off with saying that it was all down to his being overweight, but anyone who knew him well will tell you the real reason. It was stress. And we all know where that stress came from. He was a man who lived for his family, and naturally he wanted the best for us, and by God we got it. I may have been born into a working-class family, but you won't hear me whinging on about poverty and hardship, like a certain aunt I could mention. We were very well provided for in every respect. My father is proof, if anyone needs to hear it, that with determination and a willingness to work hard, you can have the good things in life. So when I was a little girl growing up in Hull, while we were never what anyone would ever call rich, you'd be hard-pressed to describe us as poor. Quite well off, thank you very much indeed. By the standards of those days I'm talking about. My father would be amazed if he were alive today at all the things we have in our house that we take completely for granted. Anyway, I think it's fair to say that my mother, when she married my father, made a good catch. The same cannot be said, however, of Auntie Shirley. Now, I've got nothing against Uncle Derek. Uncle Derek was a good chap. No one is trying to deny that. He was very friendly, he had a wonderful way with children, and he was very good-natured. But when it came to money, well, let's say he was not another Lord Rothschild. And if you're going to try and pin the blame on anyone for this whole situation, then I'm afraid it has to be him. But try telling Auntie Shirley that. Noisette swirl. I think you'd have to say, if I'm talking about looks here, not taste, that this one is the most attractive in the box. Tastes quite nice, dear. Now, of course, I was still only a girl when all this trouble first blew up. We must be talking, what, late 50s? And I only found out this from Mother just before she died. You see, Derek worked on the docks in Hull. But he only got that job through Dad. You see, although Dad was a union man through and through, he was on good terms with the bosses. You have to be, don't you? You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And he'd been able to pull a few strings. So Derek was in. But apparently he never settled down. And unbeknownst to any of us, he's applying for jobs right, left and centre. That's how grateful he was. Anyway, he eventually lands this job as a salesman in the machine tool industry in Coventry. Quite well paid. Opportunities for commission, etc., etc. My father was a generous-hearted man, and he didn't really take offence at Derek going behind his back like that, and said, good luck to you. Well, naturally enough, Auntie Shirley and Uncle Derek saw this as their opportunity to move into the owner-occupier class. Nothing wrong with that. I'm all in favour of people improving themselves. One slight problem, though. They didn't have the money for the deposit. Could Daddy lend them 500 quid? Lot of money in them days. No problem. That's the kind of man my father was. Charged a rate of interest only on a par with what he would have got if he'd left it in the building society. I think it was due to be paid back at the rate of £10 a month over 5 years, something like that. Well, for a couple of years, everything went fine. First of the month, cheque drops through the letterbox, no problem. Till, of course, you can guess, the inevitable. The first of the month comes, but no cheque. Well, it was left a couple of weeks, and then my mother thought she ought to make a discreet enquiry of her sister as to the whereabouts of the lolly. Oh, did Derek not send it? She says, all innocent. I told him to. I'll have it in the post first thing. Well, she's as good as her word. Cheque arrives 2 days later. Only one problem. No signature. Very convenient. Mother's on the blower again. Terribly apologetic is Shirley, but as my mother said when she came off the phone, fine words, but are no parsnips. Anyway, another 2 days pass, and lo and behold, another cheque. This time signed and dated and everything proper. Thank goodness that's all sorted out, we thought. But I don't think I have to tell you what happened next. The cheque is made of rubber and comes bouncing straight back to us. Well, that's when my father lost his temper. Took a lot to rouse him, but my, when he was. He was a great bull of a man, and I tell you, you didn't want to be in the road when he was on the warpath. He was all set to climb in that car and drive straight down to Coventry and have it out with them. Took all my mother's best efforts to restrain him. Well, when my mother got on the phone to Auntie Shirley again that night, it finally all came out. She broke down in tears, apparently. Mother was hard-pressed to get a coherent word out of her. It transpires that Derek has been caught with his hand in the till and been given the sack. And what's more, it had all happened 3 months ago. Why, oh, why did you leave it until now to tell us, says my mother. Auntie Shirley says they thought they could sort it out. Thought Uncle Derek could get another job straight away. With no references, fat chance. And what's more, Auntie Shirley has gone and got herself in the family way again. Like my mother said, that was just downright silly. But I'm afraid a sense of responsibility was never their strong suit. So, it was eventually sorted out that the repayments would be reduced to £5 a month and the loan period extended accordingly. I'm just going to have another chocolate. Chocolate Brazil. I love all nuts. Brazil and hazelnut especially. So, things are back on an even keel. Although Derek is still out of work, he's able to pick up little things here and there, and the £5 checks are arriving bang on the nail. Then, the bombshell happens. We knew nothing about it till they turned up on our doorstep, her with a toddler and a baby in the pushchair, and 6 months pregnant to boot. They had their house repossessed. Well, that was a nightmare, as you can imagine. It was one of the few times I can remember my parents having a real argument. You see, Dad was all for telling them where to get off. But Mother was saying, she is my sister. So in the end, Mother has her way, and we take them in. Well,
The atmosphere in that house was simply unbearable. Talk about tension. I was only about 13 at the time, but I can remember it all too clearly. They'd been with us maybe a month, and Dad is doing his nut. But being the man he was, he's pulling out all the stops to get Derek a job. How else was he going to get them off our backs? Well, it would have been about then that Auntie Shirley fell down the stairs and had the miscarriage. We've talked about this since many times, and I know it sounds incredible, but Mother and I were pretty well convinced that she did it on purpose. I know that's an awful thing to say, but I'm afraid that's the conclusion you have to draw. It would have been shortly after that that Auntie Shirley had her first spell in the mental hospital. Well, maybe that's what finally spurred Derek into action, because glory be, he got himself a job. The Midlands again, but this time in Solihull, selling ladies' ties. Not very glamorous, I know, but better than nothing. And what's more, they got themselves a house, albeit rented, but none the worse for that. At least they weren't going to have a mortgage hanging around the necks like last time. 6 months later, and my dad has his heart attack. Well, excuse me, it still gets me, even after all these years. Well, you couldn't exactly blame Shirley and Derek for it happening. But let's just say that all the upset they caused us didn't help. Well, the funeral was amazing. Half Hull docks stay out for the morning to pay their respects. A queue of mourners stretching half a mile back from the cemetery. It was a wonderful tribute to a great, great man. And I must say that Shirley and Derek were wonderful. They really rallied round, I'll give them that. So there we were, me and my mother, getting by on a widow's pension. It could have been very hard, but Dad had taken out a number of insurance policies, so all things considered, we weren't too badly off. And the union were marvellous. The unions were marvellous in those days. What went wrong? Continental truffle. I like the continent. We've been several times. I know this is an awful thing for a married woman to say, but I do like continental men, particularly Italian men. There's something very wicked about them. So, that's how it was. Them in Solihull, and me and my mother in Hull. I think you'd have to say that a state of uneasy truce existed between us. When I was 16, I got my first job as a shorthand typist for furniture wholesalers in Grimsby. And 3 years after that, of course, I met Dave, who, of course, was still on boats in the Navy at the time. Well, my mother was determined to pull out all the stops for the wedding, and by God, she did. Ask anyone who came. They'll tell you that that was the most sumptuous wedding that they've ever attended. And what's more, it seemed like a very good excuse to patch things up with the Solihull contingent. Auntie Shirley was there for a week beforehand, helping with the preparations. Jenny, that's Shirley's daughter, was going to be one of the bridesmaids, and Mark, the son, was to be the page boy. And Derek, with my own father having passed over, was going to give me away. But Derek, by this time, is no longer in ladies' tights. He's gone through a whole succession of jobs in the intervening time, mostly in selling. So many, if truth be told, that we were hard-pressed to keep up. But nevertheless, he seemed to be doing all right for himself. Anyway, the night before the wedding, Derek is called down to London for a mysterious meeting at the head office of whoever he was working for at the time. We thought it was a bit strange, but we were far too busy with the preparations to play it much mind. The only real hiccup occurs when Derek doesn't show on the morning of the wedding till half an hour before the service is due to begin, in a hired car. Says his car has broken down on the motorway. Well, these things happen. The rest of the day goes off without a hitch. Marvellous. It wasn't until we got back from the honeymoon in Alicante that I found out the truth. Derek had been called down to London to be given the sack. Again. And what's more, had had his company car taken away from him. So much for the breakdown on the M1. And furthermore, it turns out that in order to pay for the hired car, he'd had to borrow money from a neighbour in Solihull. Would my mother fork out so that he could repay the neighbour? Well, it was like we were in a time warp. It was only a question of £50 or so, but it was the principle
Well, after all the hard work Auntie Shirley had put into the wedding, my mother didn't feel as though she could say no. But then I got quite firm. I can do sometimes. I said, Mother, you're going to need some sort of security against the loan. Remember last time? What do you suggest, Chrissy? Says Mother. She always called me Chrissy. Might Shirley be prepared to give up her engagement ring? That was my suggestion. Seemed like a sensible sort of compromise at the time. If you say so, Chrissy, says my mother. Well, anyone would have thought that my mother had asked Shirley to make a burnt offering of one of her children. It was only a rotten engagement ring, and not a very expensive one at that. I don't suppose it was even worth 50 quid. Might not even have been a real sapphire, not inconceivable. Well, she made such a fuss, screaming and ranting, that my mother, bless her heart, came over all soft and said, forget it, have the £50, pressing it into her handbag like this. At which point, Auntie Shirley tears off her engagement ring, hurls it across the room and screams, there's your bloody security. I'm sorry for swearing, but that is what she said. Then she starts going on about my mother having always resented any successes that she and Derek had ever had, and how my mother had always had the knives out for their marriage. Later on, when we talked about it, Mother and I could not make head nor tail of that one at all. Toffee and mallow. Did you know that mallow was a plant? Wildflower originally, but it has been domesticated, so to speak. We've got a purple variety growing next to our alpine rockery. I like the colour purple. I think it's my favourite colour of all. Oh, being a navy wife to start off with was not all a bed of roses, I can tell you. There is something about a sailor, I'll grant you. I've never been able to resist a man in uniform. But sometimes the waiting around could get you down. And those Ministry of Defence estates, well, let's say they were a long way from executive residences. But all that shunting from pillar to post meant that the problems of Auntie Shirley and Uncle Derek did recede somewhat. For that relief, much thanks. Of course, news filtered through each week. I always made a point of spending at least an hour on the phone to Mother every Sunday morning. Dave used to complain about the bills. I said, Dave, stop complaining. Be grateful. You've got the mother-in-law you have, and not some others I could mention.
We got the transfer to Faz Lynn in February 1982, which was fortunate for a man who had been serving on ships up till then. I don't say I have to jog your memory. Little local difficulty somewhere down in the South Atlantic. Now, I must say that I've never felt more proud to be British than I did at that time. But I hope you can understand it when I say that I was still very glad it wasn't my husband who was down there. So anyway, when everyone was getting out the bunting, arranging street parties and holding victory parades, I was quietly going about my business in between times, buying a maisonette on Mother's behalf in a very discreet private estate, not half a mile from where I'm sitting now. Dave wasn't too sure about having Mother so close, but I said, Dave, that woman is a miracle worker with children. She is going to be worth her weight in gold. Not many people round here can lay claim to having a babysitter permanently on tap only half a mile down the road. Well, that was what swung it for him. Mother would have been installed in the July that year. It must have been the following September that we got the news from Solihull. Mother phoned me straight away. I could tell from the tone of her voice that something was up. It's Derek, she says. I said, what? Is he up to his old tricks? She said, no. I said, Mother, quickly tell me. She said, the big C. Well, Derek had always been a 40-a-day man. Kensitas. Even when they were at their most hard up. I remember saying at the time, I would only have been about 14. I said, why doesn't Uncle Derek give up smoking? My suggestion was more directed at saving him a few quid a week. Little did I know then that if he'd acted upon my advice, it might have saved his life. He was dead by Christmas. I was sad. I cried. I'm quite happy to admit that. Whatever Derek's manifest inadequacies might have been as a man, there was still no denying that underneath it all he was a good chap. Had only the one insurance policy. That only amounted to maybe £1,000. And she went and spent that on a new three-piece suite before it was barely cold in his grave. Next thing you know, she's on the phone again to Mother, complaining how hard up she is. I said, Mother, I've no sympathy. Anyway, next thing you know, Shirley's moving up to Leeds to be near her daughter, who in the meantime has married the aforementioned synthesizer player. We had a little laugh about it at the time. Well, I mean, what would she be doing wanting to move to a place like Leeds? Not that I've been there, but I can't imagine it amounting to much. Mother did go down to visit her the once. Came back, told me all about it. Said the house was appalling. Gratty little terrace with Pakistanis on both sides of her. And furthermore, it was what they call a back-to-back. I sort of thought they went out with Queen Victoria. But Mother said she seemed happy enough, each to his own. I'll say one thing for Auntie Shirley, though. She was always very good to my children. Never a birthday passed without a card arriving, containing a nice crisp £5 note. But I couldn't help thinking, it's a terrible thing to think, I know, but I couldn't help thinking that Auntie Shirley was only regarding those fibres as deposits in a bank account to be drawn upon in the future. Dave said it was mean-minded of me to think such thoughts. I said, Dave, time will tell. I think the arrival of this letter this morning proves that I was right. I've only got two left now. One more to go before the hazelnut cluster. I suppose we must have first begun to realise that there was something seriously wrong with Mother when she began to lose so much weight in the autumn of 1986. That was a great shame. You see, Dave and I had taken out private health insurance for us and the kids when we first moved up to Scotland. I was anxious that Dave should inquire as to whether we could obtain cover for Mother as well. Well, it turned out that the premiums were going to be prohibitive, what with Mother being the age she was, and what with us having all the extra financial commitments of the new house and whatnot. It was a great pity. Looking back now, I wish we'd made the sacrifice. But there's no point in crying over spilt milk. What's done is done. I'll say this for Mother. She was amazingly brave. It was diagnosed as liver failure. Mother was always partial to a little drop of brandy, and I don't suppose that did her any good. But it was very painful for me, Dave, and the children to watch her waste away like that. The doctors and nurses were wonderful. I know what some people say about the NHS, but all I can say in the case of my mother is that everything that could have been done was done. I have no complaints whatsoever. Of course, as soon as she heard she was ill, Shirley was on the first train. It got me a bit peeved, I can tell you. The message that she was giving out was that her presence would be indispensable for her sister's welfare. Catching her starting to scrape the new potatoes for the umpteenth time, I snatched the knife away from her and said, "It's all right, Auntie Shirley, I'm quite capable." I think she got the message. She went the day after. But Mother took a long time a-going. She was in no hurry to say goodbye to this life, I can tell you. So it wasn't all that long before wonderful, all-caring, all-loving Nurse Shirley is back with us once more. Every minute she's got, she's up there at that hospital, sat by that bedside, playing the devoted sister. It made me want to stick my fingers down my throat. You might say, what's wrong with a woman attending on her dying sister? I tell you what's wrong. She was poisoning her mind. Trouble was, I didn't realise what was going on. Not until she got back from the hospital one afternoon and announced, bold as brass, that Mother wanted to make some changes to the will. And you should have seen the smile that was playing on her lips as she said it. I'd swear she was smiling. Dave says that I'm making it up, but I know what I saw. She says, "Your mother asked me to get in touch with the solicitors in George Street, so I have. They're coming round to the hospital tomorrow morning." I said, "What changes is she proposing to make?" She said, "Your mother wants to leave me £10,000 so that I can buy myself a little flat. That will still leave another £15,000 for you and the kids, plus whatever you get for the maisonette." Are you beginning to get the picture? They say God moves in a mysterious way, and I'm inclined to believe them. Mother passed away that very night. You wouldn't believe the change that came over Auntie Shirley after that. The way she was acting towards me. You'd have thought that there had never been a closer relationship between an aunt and a niece as existed between me and her. It was sickening. And the funeral. She's all in black, head to toe, and tears. She insisted on getting into the first car. I had to get Dave to go up to her and tell her, "Auntie Shirley, there's no room. You'll have to go in with Mrs. Elliot and her children." She didn't like it. The day after, and it's time for her to go home to Leeds. She comes into my bedroom just as I'm putting on my makeup and says, "Christine, about the will." I said, "What about the will?" She said, "Do you not feel obliged to honour your mother's promise to me?" I said, "Auntie Shirley, I wasn't even there. How am I to know what she promised you and what she didn't? If looks could kill." Well, the atmosphere that morning in the car on the way to the station. Not a word spoken the whole way. Finally, just as she's about to get on the train, she says, "I've had a very hard life, Christine." I said, "Auntie Shirley, haven't we all?" Well, it would have been about a fortnight later that she started getting on the phone to me and demanding her £10,000. I said, "Auntie Shirley, you're not in a position to demand anything." She said, "Are you accusing me of lying?" I said, "Aunt Shirley, I'm not accusing you of anything. But it's just that an objective person taking an overview of the situation might come to the conclusion that your taking advantage of mother's illness for your own financial advantage was verging on the immoral." Well, that's when all the screaming and cursing started that I was telling you about earlier on. Appalling language, quite appalling. I tried to calm her down. I said, "Auntie Shirley, I know you're hard up, but the law is the law, and there's nothing I nor anyone else can do about that." Then she starts bringing all sorts of totally irrelevant things into the argument. She says, "If we're talking about morality, do you think it's very moral what your husband does for a living?" I said, "What?" She says, "Loading missiles onto Polaris submarines." I said, "Auntie Shirley, he's defending you, me and our loved ones from communism. I can't think of anything more moral." Then she starts going on about murder and genocide and other such nonsense. Well, that's when I gave up on her. I thought there's no hope for this woman. But I didn't put the phone down. I didn't lose my temper. I kept very calm. After all, I thought, she is my aunt and the children are very fond of her. So I thought I'd better patch it up, if only for appearance's sake. I thought I'd make a gesture. Sure willing, I said, "Auntie Shirley, in view of the tremendous help that you gave to me, Dave, and the children during Mother's terrible illness, we've decided we'd like to make you a gift. We thought £1,000 might be a suitable figure." She hung up. What can you do with someone like that? But I didn't get bitter. I sat down that afternoon and wrote her a letter, and I explained to her all about the children's education and how tight things were, and restating my offer of the £1,000. I'm not one to hold a grudge. Nothing. No phone call, no letter, nothing. Till this morning, that is. Postman knocks about 11, just as I'm sitting down to my 11s. He said, "You got a parcel?" I said, "A parcel for me." And he gives it to me. Open it up. Box of chocolates. My favourites, very nice. Only there was a letter that came with it. The letter I've got here now. It's pathetic, really. I mean, was there ever a gift that was more obviously a bribe? I'll read you the rest of the letter. "I'm sorry that there has been bad blood between us, and I regret very deeply some of the things I said to you down the phone. But please understand that your mother's death upset me dreadfully." She's underlined dreadfully twice. "And that led me to say things I now regret. I hope that we can leave all this behind us and be friends once more. Your offer of the £1,000 was a kind one, and I appreciate it. I'm currently in very difficult financial circumstances, and that money will go a long way to seeing me right again. As a token of reconciliation, I am enclosing a box of chocolates. I know these are your favourites. I hope you enjoy them. Lots of love to Dave and the children. I look forward to hearing from you, Auntie Shirley." She looks forward to hearing from me. Well, I'm sorry, Auntie Shirley, but you're going to wait a long time. I've no sympathy. The woman is sick. And I don't take too kindly to bribery. Hazelnut cluster. All good things come to those who wait.
Prunella Scales as Christine opened A Box of Chocolates by Chris Reason. The director was Clive Brill.